Elected to chair the Select Committee on Security and Justice that will be processing the bill. You are tabling you from the Civilian Secretariat, I want to believe. Okay. So I'm going to allow you to introduce yourselves first before we start with the presentation. Order, please, Honorable Oliphant. Can you please introduce yourself, colleagues? Into the record, please.
My name is Dawn Bell. I'm the Chief Director for Legislation from the Civilian Secretariat for Police.
Thank you. Kurulego, do you want to help with the mic there? You can move the other one.
Members, my name is Osong Kululeko Milton Ndwana. I'm the Director for Legislation in the Civilian Secretariat for Police.
In a true sense. Honourable members, we'll be dealing today with the bill called the Critical Infrastructure Bill, which is a Section 75 bill. It is handled by the Department of Civilian Secretariat. It is integral part of the SAPS, the Department of Police in the country. The Critical Infrastructure Bill is effecting amendments to what was formerly known as the National Key Points Act. The colleagues will be taking us through as to what then necessitates the amendment and the changing of the actual legislation, the National Key Points Act, to the new Critical Infrastructure Bill, and the purpose thereof. Over to you then. You can do it in at least at most 20 minutes. And that includes your bonus time.
Thank you, Chair. We'll certainly try. Chair, I will just go through quickly through the introduction, the background, and the processes that we followed, and then my colleague, Mr. Ntwana, will go through the actual content of the bill. Okay, so by way of introduction, then, the Department of Police started this process of the review of the National Key Points Act as far back as 2007, when they published a draft National Key Points and Strategic Installations Bill in April for public comments. And then around about March 2014, the public protector recommended a review. We just wanted to show just how long this has been in the process. The public protector recommended a review of the National Key Points Act in a report 25 of 2013-2014. In December 2014, the High Court of South Africa, Gauteng Local Division, in a case that was brought before it by the Right to Know campaign versus the manager of police, and the judge in that matter pointed out some constitutional shortcomings which actually made this process go faster. So what happened was that as a result of the clear need to review the National Key Points, a draft policy was formulated to form the basis on which the Critical Infrastructure Protection Bill was developed through a series of consultations. You'll see later on who the consultations were held with. Besides the internal ones, there were also external consultations. The bill seeks to replace the National Key Point and bring the legal framework for the protection of critical infrastructure in line with the constitutional imperatives and changing developments both nationally and internationally. The bill is aimed at ensuring that South Africa maintains a robust and sustainable approach to the protection of South Africa's critical infrastructure in the interests of the state and all its citizens. If we go to slide 4, so on the introduction and background, the bill creates, in essence, a transparent process of declaring critical infrastructure which involves several government departments that you will see later on also when we speak about the council. That has been established by means of this bill. It ensures the constitutionality by providing for application of the promotion of access to information as well as the promotion of Administrative Justice Act. So these acts also assist when there's questions that are asked about the actual key points. that this can be done through this, these provisions of these two acts. It also provides for improved description of offences, which wasn't in the previous act, by requiring that conduct must be unlawful for an unlawful purpose or in contravention of a notice. These, Chair must also add, were not part of the previous act, and this is a great improvement on that. So the bill promotes for a spirit of cooperation between various role players in order to provide for a multi-disciplinary approach to deal with critical infrastructure protection. There's an overview, Chair, that these are the processes that we followed, and that during the development of the draft bill, several government departments were consulted. In order to improve on the 2007 draft. So during 2015, the draft was processed to cabinet for approval for publication, for public comments, and then in April 2016, cabinet approved publication of the draft bill in the Gazette for public comment.
We cannot start a meeting with the draft for 2016. We cannot do that. That's unprocedural, and I'm sorry. We have to wait for people. Because we might have other colleagues coming in. We cannot do that.
I'm not sure if we want to discuss this on the elephant, but let's not allow it.
Chair, I'll keep the meeting started at 10:30 and then be here and you won't have it. So I ask you, start the meeting because by 10:30 I want to leave. Now you said we are all here, what are we waiting for? So I mean to say, the Honorable Ellen Brett, when we talk here, she was here, and when we start the meeting, she goes out with the phone. But I mean to say, what is wrong? Unconstitutional. I mean, we are here, the meeting, it's a meeting day to day, the date is today, but now, what is wrong with that? So no man, let us, not, let's not become busy.
Chairperson, I've got a suggestion.
Can you say what you say into the letter?
Chairperson, I have a suggestion. We are three members from the DA. Can you hear me? Am I on? Oh. Okay. Can you hear me? Am I on or not?
I don't know.
Okay. Chairperson, we are three members from the DA. And if we can find out whether they apologize for this meeting, then I have no problem continuing the meeting. But it is unprocedural. So if they have not apologized, maybe we can just find out from the secretary. If they have apologized, then I will not have a problem, but I want to make a note that this is an unprocedural meeting. Maybe we can just find out from the secretary.
I know what.
It's fine if you go to court, you can go to court.
I know what. Is highly unbecoming. Highly disrespectful and very contemptuous of all other members of the committee that are sitting here. What makes you think that you can walk up with your phone and buzz into the meeting and just get in and jump in and say what you want and raise it as a point of order without even being recognized by the chair of the meeting? What makes you think that you're that superior to this all member?
The meeting is scheduled. Which means if I walk out of here before 10:30, it's my full right.
How do you know that we have discussed among ourselves and agreed? She explained to you we have discussed among ourselves.
The meeting is scheduled for 10:30. In other words, I have full right to walk out of here and onto the phone. But at 10:30, I will not answer my phone because then the meeting starts.
But I'm saying to you, I'm not going to engage into a dialogue with you.
No, Chairperson, don't you dare speak to me like that.
I am not going to engage into... Well, you can speak any way you like to me, and I cannot speak the way I like to you. Mm. Is that what you're saying? You can say anything.
No, I did not say anything rude, Chairperson. I asked that the meeting We both started from the solution. No, Jacob, I will not. The meeting is supposed to start at 10:30.
Can you leave
this meeting? I will not leave this meeting, Jacobson. I will not.
Can you leave this meeting?
Why should I leave this meeting?
I am ordering you to leave.
No, Jay, I will not.
In my capacity as chairwoman.
I will not.
Let me intervene.
Don't you dare tell me to leave.
Let me intervene.
Honourable, my last one is leave this meeting.
Chair? 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 Let me intervene.
Honourable Mukwili,
yes.
From the chair, I am finalizing this matter. Please, let's not.
Yeah, but before, before you finalize it, firstly, before you act on a member, you must know that we started the meeting before the actual time. Whatever action that you are going to take is going to be against you. That one you must know, chair, because we have agreed as members. We have agreed. That we start a meeting before time. And I will request that yourself and Honorable Engelbrecht, you must calm down and agree here. She has put something on the table that if we can check whether members of the DA have apologized or not. If not, we must start with the meeting and we must by all means try to condone unnecessary tension. I've been out for quite some time. I hope we will run our things according to check. So I would request that because we have started far much earlier than the actual time. Now I'm saying to you, Chair, it's within your right to take a decision. But whatever decision that you are going to take, you must know that it will be against you. I'm just coaching
but
you.
No fight, so
and then let's check the availability of DA members, whether we should start or what. Others, we don't have any problem of starting, and I know this meeting doesn't need a quorum. Whether Mama Oliphant leaves the meeting, it's not a problem. She can leave. We can start at half past 10. This meeting doesn't need a quorum, but let's refrain from unnecessary intolerance.
I don't care whether we're sitting here with us in a meeting or whatever. You cannot sit down and say, stop. This thing is not. We are elders. I don't know where this behavior is coming from. I think you talk about the behavior. Not about what you are rather. If they put it down and declare our members are in it. No, this thing must be held up. Then someone comes to say, hey, stop. You cannot do this and that. Let me honor. That's the only thing that.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me start by saying I am disappointed about the behavior of the honorable member because that behavior undermines the chair and the committee at large. You know, what the honorable member said while I was standing here, he could have said him sitting down, raising his hand and saying, no. One of the members, they're not doing it now. Mm-hmm. then we would have explained why we're standing. Because when we discussed to start the meeting, the member was present. But before we agreed to start the meeting, the member took his phone and went out. But when he comes in, he jumped on us. That behavior alone is very bad. The honourable member, very bad. It's very bad in such a way that other people can interpret that with something else, but it was bad. Let me come to the point that was made by Honourable Mbuyi. Honourable Mbuyi is right. In a sense that we did agree, all of us who were present at that time, let's start the presentation. There's some documents here in this presentation. Whoever comes late will grab the document, read the document, and also able to contribute positively. This is not something else that will be debated and be passed without any other member. But let me say, other members, be disciplined. Even if you want to talk about something that you don't like, but don't stand up and shout. Have a respect. Make sure that whatever you do does not make this committee to deteriorate up to the standard of the lowest ever that we have seen. Chairperson, let me propose to continue the meeting. 5 minutes left, because we agreed to start the meeting at that time. It was not a pass when we started the meeting. Let's carry on.
Chairperson, I made a suggestion which I think is a very suggestion which I would really like for James to consider. But let's have a look at the other DA members or other members.
Why did you hold this meeting and apologize on your behavior?
See, I have nothing to apologize for. The meeting officially starts at 10:30 and I walked out with my phone and the meeting should start at 10:30. So I have absolutely nothing to apologize for.
So that is the best way you would have raised your concern, by jumping into the meeting, shouting at the members when the meeting
I never shouted. I said point of order, Chairperson, which is a normal standard procedure. When you're interrupting a meeting, I said, Chairperson, point of order. That's how I started.
Did I give you an opportunity to speak? Did I grant you that as chair? Am I not supposed to grant you a right to speak before you speak now, as chair? That's my question to you.
I thought you've given me an opportunity now.
It's because you undermine everybody, especially the best people.
Oh, that is ridiculous to come on the racist thing. Because you are not procedurally correct, now you go on the racist card. How ridiculous! How ridiculous, James.
Can we proceed?
No, you cannot. The meeting is scheduled to start at 10:30, Chairperson. At 10:30. Then it will start at 10:30 unless the secretary can prove to us that the other members have apologized. Then I have no problem.
Yes. Can I please record the apologies?
Yes, Chairman. Honourable Mohapi, Dr. Bowden, Honourable Wana, and Honourable Chetty Obama.
And Honourable Mikulakis has not apologized, so we will have to wait
anywhere to.
Can you proceed, ma'am?
Chairperson, we can only start the 10:30.
Chairperson,
we can only start the 10:30.
Proceed, ma'am.
We can only start the 10:30, Jay.
Proceed with
it. We can start the 10:30.
Hey,
I'm recording everything.
I'm recording everything.
10:30 we will start. We will start. It's now 10, according to my watch, 10:26.
No.
This is 10:30.
Okay, is it 10:30? I'm open for...
This is 10:30.
Okay, is it 10:30? Okay, then chairperson, I have no problem with this. As per our meeting, which is 10:30. Oh, no, 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 we took out the letter with you.
Madame, this is
10:30. We don't have so much care with you.
Thank you, Jim. Okay, chair, I'm on slide 5. I'm on slide 5 right now. And
chairperson, then we have to start at the beginning, see? Because the meeting
is not...
Proceed, where is stop, ma'am?
Thank you, Chair. Okay, so in view of the process that was followed in, as I was saying previously, that we had consulted with a number of government departments in the development of this bill in order to improve on what was initially drafted in 2007. So during 2015, the draft bill was processed to obtain cabinet approval for publication for public comment, and on the 26th of April, cabinet approved this publication and the bill was published in the Gazette. And then on the 13th of May, the bill was published, and comments were invited up until the 15th of June 2016. Then these comments that were received were scrutinized, they were looked at, and also they were incorporated into the bill. Those that we considered were valuable and made added value to the drafting of the bill. If you look at slide 6, Chair, there's a list of the stakeholders who were consulted and who commented on the bill. Okay, and then if we go to slide 7. Still on the overview, in August and September 2016, the edited draft, this is after all the comments were taken into consideration, the edited draft bill was presented at various DG's clusters, meetings for approval to submit to Cabinet. In November 2016, the bill was tabled at NEDLAC, where a task team deliberated on the bill, and this, Chair, I'd like to add was that we went through clause by clause of the entire bill with members of the NEDLAC team. In April 2017, Cabinet approved the bill for introduction on conditions that the deliberations at NEDLAC were finalised. It took a period of about 6 months or so for us to finalise this process. And then in July, NEDLAC completed its report and submitted it to the Minister and to the Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee. On slide 8, on November 2017, the bill was introduced in Parliament. The Portfolio Committee on Police established a bill for public comment. This was the second public comment that was held in terms of the parliamentary processes.
Okay, carry on.
And several organizations commented and made submissions. Then as a result of these submissions, there was a legal opinion that was brought forth by Ama Bungani, which was obtained by, and then we also obtained one in response to this legal opinion. It was obtained by the Parliamentary Legal Services and resulted also in the amendments to Clause 26, which deals with the offences. The bill was deliberated on and several amendments were made by the committee before adoption on the 14th of August 2018. And then during the second reading debate on August 2018, the bill was supported by all political parties. So, Chair, I'll just hand over now to my colleague to go into the content of the bill. Thank you.
Once again, morning, Chair, honourable members. As the purpose of the bill, Chair, you find that in clause 2 of the bill, the purpose of the bill is to secure critical infrastructure against threats, and also it is to ensure that objective criteria for the identification and declaration of critical infrastructure, the public-private cooperation for identification and protection of critical infrastructure, and also the purpose is to promote cooperation and a culture of shared responsibility between various role players. And one of the purposes of the bill also is to enhance capacity to absorb and mitigate security risk, and also to ensure that critical infrastructures comply with regulatory measures. One of the purposes also, Chair, is to ensure that it supports integrating and coordination of functions of various role players. Chair, on slide 10, this is now the structure of the bill, how the bill is structured. In chapter 1, we've got the definitions and the purposes which I've just read, as well as the application of the Act. And then in chapter 2, it deals with the Infrastructure Council and its structures, and then also the administration of the Act, the committees, exemption, and the delegations. And then in chapter 3, is where now we deal with the issue of declaration of infrastructure, and also with the issue of administrative arrangements, such as the powers of the minister to declare, as well as the factors that the minister must take into account when it comes to declarations, as well as now the applications by the President Control and the National Commissioner. And then when it comes to chapters 4 to 7, it's where we're dealing with the issue of the duties of the person in control of the infrastructure, and it's where we find the offences and penalties, as well as the regulations and the personal provisions in the bill. Chair, the definition of infrastructure. In the bill, we've got the definition as infrastructure means any building, center, establishment, facility, installation, pipeline premises or systems needed for the functioning of society, network for the delivery of electricity or water, but excludes any information infrastructure as contemplated in any legislation on cyber security. I'm not sure if the members are aware that there is another bill that's currently being dealt with by Justice that deals with the issue of cyber security. Maybe that bill is also coming to the committee. Last time we checked, it was still in the National House, in the Portfolio Committee. And then critical infrastructure is now, is when this infrastructure that I've described above has been declared as such by the Minister. The definition of infrastructure therefore spans several factors where the need for proper functioning of government and delivery of basic public services are to be found. And Chair, these sectors include energy, communication, food supplies, water, transport, administration, health and technology. And as I mentioned before, that however, critical infrastructure is only when these infrastructures have been declared by the minister to be critical. Also, the next slide just emphasizes that not all infrastructure that is critical, it only becomes critical when it has been declared as such and it has met the criteria. This bill takes into account the critical infrastructure that it may fall into various sectors, such as the communication and energy, transport and water, etc., etc. The bill also seeks to harmonize this with the sectoral legislation with a view to protect the physical integrity of these infrastructures. The process of declaration is sort of outlined in that diagram. The application first comes to the National Commissioner, and the National Commissioner then advises the Council as to whether this should be declared or not, and then the Council recommends to the Minister, and it's ultimately the Minister that actually declares infrastructure to be critical infrastructure. The next slide is the Infrastructure Council. This Chair, is something new that's not in the national key points. This is something new, and if you look at the bill, you'll find that in clause 4 of the bill. This council is going to be composed of government as well as private sector and community people. From the government, there'll be the Department of Defense, the Department of Home Affairs, Public Works, National Disaster Management. We're also going to be having SALGA, South African Police, as well as State Security. And this council proposed that it's going to be chaired by the Secretary for the Civilian Secretariat for Police. And also, as I mentioned, there'll be five persons from the private sector as well as the community. And these people will be appointed by the minister, but on recommendation by the Portfolio Committee on Police.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to start with this slide. I was saying that this bill provides for the establishment of the Critical Infrastructure Council. And the proposal is that this council is going to be composed of government employees at the level of chief director and upwards with the necessary skills, as well as five persons who might be coming from the public and the community sector. And as I mentioned, that the government departments that will propose to be on this council are from the Department of Defense, Home Affairs, Public Works, National Disaster Management, SALGA, SAPS, as well as State Security. And also in the bill, Chair, we are proposing that this council should be chaired by the Secretary of Police. And from the five experts that we are proposing to be coming from the community and private sector, we are proposing that this should be recommended by the relevant committee in the National Assembly, which might be the Portfolio Committee. And in the bill, Chair, if you look at Clause 4.7, it's where it sets out the whole process as to the appointment of these experts. But there will be a notice that will be published in the Gazette, and there will be a shortlist that will be compiled of 20 people, and these 20 people will be vetted by State Security Agency to get top security clearance, and also the interviews that will be conducted, and a short list of 10 people will be submitted to the minister in the order of preference, and then the minister will have to appoint these five people and submit them and publish their names in the Government Gazette. Also, Chair, the bill also outlines the functions of the council. Also in the slide, if you look at the slide there in that column, it says that they'll be approving the guidelines, they'll receive and consider applications that will come in from the National Commissioner and make recommendations on applications to the Minister. So in the bill, we're proposing that the council should be reporting to the minister within 3 months after the end of each financial year. And then, Chair, the next slide is the administration of the Act. That will find in clause 9 of the bill. How we propose is that this Act must be administered by the National Commissioner. We said that the National Commissioner is responsible for authority to administer the Act, and also advise the council who in turn recommend to the minister. Also, there it's outlined the functions of the National Commission outlined also in the bill, in clause 9.2, that is to develop guidelines and standards, develop structures, mechanisms for government cooperation, and also establish certain procedures, and they'll be considering the applications from the person in control. They'll be conducting the physical security assessment, recommend applications, and there will be also the National Commissioner will also be designating warrant officers to be inspectors, and they will compile and submit quarterly reports to the Council. Then, Chair, the next slide is what I've just outlined above, that the National Committee will designate certain members of SAPS to be warrant, I mean, as inspectors, but it's only not ordinary members, it's just members who are at the rank of warrant officer. And then the functions of the inspector that are found in clause 11 of the bill, that the inspectors will be inspecting and verifying information about infrastructure, as well as people who don't who fail to comply with security measures, they'll be issuing compliance orders. That is for, and also for owners who fail to refuse access to the inspectors. And then, Chair, the next slide is the structures that are supporting the National Commissioner. These structures are found in clause 12 of the bill. We're proposing that there should be ad hoc and standing committees which may be established to assist the National Commissioner in respect of the functions, that is the standards, the procedures and recommendation of the applications that I've outlined before. And then the next slide is just a coordination of these structures. SAPS will mainly be focusing on physical security and SSA on information security, as well as the disaster management. In the bill, we are also proposing the establishment of a cyber security response committee that will assist the National Commissioner with issues of information infrastructure. And then, Chair, the next slide is the whole process of declaration. In the bill, we're proposing that an application will have to be in a prescribed format, be submitted to the National Commissioner. And that process will be, you'll find the process in clause 17 of the bill. And then the National Commissioner, as soon as they receive the application, will then be conducting physical security assessment, as well also to see it, into which category this infrastructure should be categorized. And after having done the processes, and then he or she will recommend to the Council. And the Council will consider the report from the National Commissioner, and also after considering the report, then make a recommendation to the Minister. And then the Minister will have to consider everything, the report from the National Commission, as well as the recommendation from the Council, and then exercise his or her mind in declaring the critical infrastructure, as well as into which category it should be categorized. Then, Chair, the next slide is now when the Minister has decided to declare this infrastructure as critical infrastructure. There will be a certificate that will be issued by the Minister in terms of where the certificate, there will be location of where this infrastructure is, its category in terms of whether it's going to be a low, medium or high risk, and also the conditions that should be prescribed for the, on the president's control. This, Chair, you can find this process in clause 21 of the bill. And then the person in control then will receive a notice in terms of which steps must be taken into account in terms of security measures, as well as the appointment of the security manager for the infrastructure. And this issue of the security measures, as well as the appointment of security manager, you'll find that in clause 24 of the bill, Chair. And this security manager must be also, we propose that he or she must be vetted. And also in that clause, it deals with the category, the access control that will be found in clause 25 of the bill, as well as the security measures that must be implemented in this infrastructure. And then the next slide, Chair, it deals with the powers and duties of the person in control, which is now normally say is the owner. One of the duties, as I've outlined before, Chair, is that the person in control must take the prescribed steps to secure the infrastructure and appoint a security manager. Also, provision is made for this measure to be put in place, that is access control. We are proposing in the bill that the cost of these security measures must be borne by the person in control of the infrastructure. Also now, if the person in control is unable to bear the cost of the security measure, we propose that the person must advance reasons as to why government or should finance or co-finance the cost of these security measures. And then once those reasons have been furnished to the minister, then the minister, in consultation with the Minister of Finance and other affected ministers, will have to make a determination as to whether government or should finance or co-finance. Also in the bill, we split in the issue of national, if this infrastructure is national, then the Minister of Finance will have to consult with the minister. But if it's on a provincial level, then it's the MEC of finance. And then if it's a local, then it will be the municipal council. And then, say, now coming to the offences in the bill, these offences will be found in clause 26 of the bill. The offences include offences relating to unlawful disclosure of information or unlawful photography of security measures. And then, say, as a result of the submissions that have been made to the Portfolio Committee and the legal opinions that my colleague mentioned earlier on arising from the submissions from Amapungane, the committee agreed on limiting the offences and penalties to be in line with the Constitution's requirements. And the offences relating to security measures are limited to unlawful actions where the security measures are not visible or in the public domain are concerned. In other words, we're not going to be focusing on stuff that everyone can see. It's on security measures that are not in the public domain that we are focusing on. For this purpose, a definition of security measures was included in Clause 26 to ensure that innocent persons are not prosecuted for these offences. Also, Chair, the unlawful and intentional tampering with the damaging and destroying of critical infrastructure, including collaborators, are also going to be considered. The unlawful hindering or obstruction of persons in control or persons who perform functions relating to security are also covered. Unlawful entry or access without consent of security measure or in contravention of a notice will also be an offence. Damages, a person or damages, endangers or disrupts critical infrastructure will be committing an offence. So, unlawful collisions or assistance in respect of offences. Also, persons in control who furnishes false information or person who refused or failed to take required steps commits an offence. So, in terms of penalties, which are also found in clause 26 of the bill, we are proposing that offenders may be sentenced to a maximum of 3 years or imprisonment or a fine. But now, when there's an intent to cause damage or harm, then the period increases. We say the maximum imprisonment should be increased to a maximum of 3, 5, or 7, depending on the risk category of the critical infrastructure. If you remember, Chair, we said the infrastructure are going to be categorized in terms of low, medium, or high. So these sentences are corresponding to those categories. And then, Chair, we're saying when there's an actual damage or harm that is caused, then the maximum imprisonment is increased to 10, 15, or 20. That is depending on the risk category of the infrastructure. Chair, what we're also proposing in the bill is that when the person in control we're proposing that when the person in control commits an offence that is not providing false information, failing to comply with the security measure, etc., etc., that person may be sentenced to a maximum period of 5 years or a fine, and in the case of a corporate body, that fine may not exceed 10 million. So I just want to point out that there's just a typo in the presentation. In the presentation we said the maximum period is 10 years, but instead of 5, and that also the issue of the fine for corporate, instead of 10, we just put in an extra 0 there, it's 100. But the maximum period should be 5 years, and the fine should be 100 million, the maximum. And then, Chair, the issue of regulations. Regulations are gonna be proposed to be in clause 27 of the bill. In the bill, we are proposing that the regulations must be promulgated to coincide with the coming into effect of this act. In other words, once this process is done, we are already starting considering the regulations. So once this act comes into effect, the regulations must also be ready. In terms of the regulations, we are saying, in the bill, that the minister, before we promulgate the regulations, the minister must publish the proposed regulations in the Gazette, inviting comments from the public. And then once the comments have been received, then we as a drafting team have to sit down and revise the regulation to reflect the comments that were submitted where they are applicable. And then we have to revise the regulations. And also, Chair, we are proposing that the regulations must be tabled before Parliament was scrutiny before they are actually promulgated in the Gazette. Then, Chair, the next slide also just deals with the issues that are covered in the regulations that will be covered. That is the issue of the administrative procedures, the identification, classification of infrastructures, as well as the risk categories, the committees that will assist in the National Commissioner, also the issues of security measures, the emergency evacuation procedures, notice and demarcation notice, etc., etc. Those are the issues that are not in the bill, but there are empowering provisions in the bill will be dealt with in the regulations. In terms of then the procedural provisions, Chair, we are proposing that the existing key points, which are currently, I think, about 204 or so, that these current key points must be declared to be critical infrastructures, deemed to be critical infrastructures, and they must be published in the Government Gazette. And then the National Commissioner and his committees, we're giving them 48 months to review the current infrastructures to see whether they will comply with the current definition of a critical infrastructure. Then after 48 months, then we should have a new list of critical infrastructures, which means there might be new, there might be some might fall off. Then there'll be transition from that to critical infrastructure. Chair, that is the presentation from the Civil Secretariat. And Chair, I'm not sure the issue of in the bill, there's a proposal that the minister must table a report to Parliament biannually. But we noticed that in terms of clause 7 in the bill, the council is only, as I mentioned, only table the report only once annually, within 3 months after the end of his financial year. So maybe the committee can look into that, whether maybe it's not an anomaly, because the minister is accounting twice to Parliament, whereas the council is only accounting to the minister once. Maybe then you can just change that annual to biannual to annual, but the committee can just look at that. Yes, Chair, it's something that maybe we as a drafting team, we just sort of picked up this morning. Maybe it's something that we can also discuss, but we just saw that maybe it might be an anomaly that the minister reports twice to Parliament and then the council only reports once, even though the commissioner and national commissioner reports quarterly to the council, but the council only reports once to the minister.
You are the administrator of this act.
Yes.
You need to help us for us to help you.
Yes.
We legislate.
Yes.
Now, can you please give us your submission in that effect? To that effect, when you submit the 14.125 again.
Chair, then maybe our submission that the committee must consider removing the word in biannual. Then the minister must just report once to Parliament instead of reporting twice, because the council reports once to him.
Thank you. Minister, any comments?
Thanks, Chairperson. Thanks, Chairperson. So, I'm the story that I've listened before. The story that one understands. Fortunately, the story that most people we, I guess they like and they agree with, the moving from the key points to where we are today. There was a strong feeling that the previous one, when the key point was abused, to be put to points, and they feel that there's no space of abuse on this one. There's a better monetary mechanism, advice mechanism. So having heard about it, debated with people, listening to other people, I would find it proper. This point that is being raised now, I would agree with it, unless you also change that the council reports twice, because you're not going to report to the parliament that the council has not reported to you. Mm-hmm. So, whichever way, so long as you synergize, my call would be synergizing of it, and whatever the committee chooses to synergize, moving one of council to two, moving one of minister to one, so that option. But for now, I will leave with what we have just said.
Thank you, Minister. Honourable Member, can I place on the record that I have since received a letter from Tama Kumbani regarding the processes and the flaws that have been observed in the portfolio committee of the NPA processes. We are independent from the portfolio committee. We will be engaging into our own processes independently from those of the portfolio committee, and we will treat the submission of the Amakungane independently from the portfolio committee. We will proceed at the letter and reply to it independently. But then, having said that, I will first, before honourable members interact with the presentation, first allow them as to take us through on the significance of this bill in as far as it impacts the provinces, because we are a state committee of the National Council of Provinces representing provinces. After Ash would have presented the view on the significance of the bill in as far as the provinces are concerned, then Ash will then take us through the process that will unfold when we process this bill. Ash?
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you. In looking at the Constitution and Chapter 6 of the Constitution, one respects provincial powers, and particularly in Section 101B, which refers to the functional areas listed under provincial powers. And in looking at Section 114B, which requires that provincial legislatures maintain oversight, particularly over the implementation of legislation and any provincial organ of state. It's clear from the presentation that was given today, in terms of the preamble to this bill, that the spirit of cooperation within this bill, that we're looking at critical infrastructure in respect of what is essential for public safety, national security, and basic public services. Also, the preamble mentions the need to enhance cooperation between government and the private sector. And as was mentioned by the previous speaker, even on the council level, the government representatives along with private representatives, etc. And then if you look at the broad definition of infrastructure as well, which can include any building, center, establishment, etc., which clearly shows that it's the impact on provinces and provincial competencies, etc. And then, just on the second page, I pulled out particular sections in Chapter 3 of this bill that's been tabled today, speaks to the declaration of the critical infrastructure and the determination of the critical infrastructure complexes. And Section 16, for instance, mentions that infrastructure qualifies for the declaration as critical infrastructure. The functioning of such infrastructure is essential to the economy, national security, public safety, and the continuous provision of basic public services. It also goes on to say in section 17 that a person in control of infrastructure may also lodge with the National Commission an application to have such an infrastructure declared as a critical infrastructure. And in section 18 specifically, where the National Commission identifies a possible declaration as critical infrastructure, the infrastructure under the control of or occupied by local or provincial government departments, and he or she must advise the relevant municipal manager or the relevant leader of the department in the province to lodge such an application. So, members, I just wanted to highlight just a few of those sections in the Act in terms of why public participation in this particular process and it should be important, but Gershon will take you through the procedural notes on how it is that we've been advised to proceed with the ball in terms of public participation. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a procedural note for the legislation. I'm just going to take you through a few points. I'm not going to go through the whole note. So this is section 75 also. Normally this would not go to the province. But in terms of the Lamosa judgment, we advise to advertise widely. But in light of what Anthea has said in terms of the implications for provinces, they might want to comment on the book, which the committee should take into account. So it won't be a section 76 process. It will really, we'll send it to the province and ask them to deal with it through the committee processes. And if they feel like having public participation on their part and then report to us, that will be their territory. And then, Chairperson Watts, we've done is we turn to page 3, where we see the proposed program. We have already scheduled a political briefing on the 12th of September, and then our advocates, we've already done quotes for them, and we envisage the first October for advertising on Parliament site, and then the comment deadline is the 24th of October. The committee, 31st of October, what would the normal process would be, members would have a view of those written comments, and then members can decide those written comments are sufficient to carry on the deliberation, or if you need additional information from a public presentation, public hearing, or something like that. So it will be in the committee's purview to decide the way forward after we get those written comments. And then, just to draw your attention, we need to finish by at least the 14th of November, because the last meeting will be 28th and 13th of November. And we should do that on the committee.
See, that is what they have a problem with. That is what they have approved. Always when the bills are transmitted to us, they are not approved. The bill are transmitted on Monday, the 10th. Use Monday to us. And we are dealing with these 2 days data. And the province normally wants to go through it. And we go to the province and do a briefing to the province. Province is one back 6 weeks cycle that they go through it, even on the section 76 bill. And you are putting us into political mint now between the parliamentary process and the legislature processes. I want to make it categorically clear, we may not comply with that deadline. We may not. Other members, your comments and questions, please. Other Nicolakis. I noted you first, Honorable Oliphant, Nkalaki, Tetwa, in that order.
Yeah, I'm not talking in the first of all, what I don't understand is that I'm a what is that? I want the definition for this so that I might be able to understand. Because I might go to the province with this money and all this. Another thing is, Chair, there is this key issues and the key issues of something that is not on the ballot. That was discussed there. I want to understand why
if that thing not been put in the ballot or made a note for us, you still remember, when you finished, you said that there are something that is not in the ballot. Okay, so I want to know why is it not in the ballot, because other provinces were put in, others were forgetting, and it looked like something. And another thing, Chair, there is this thing. Chair, please bear in mind that we only work next week and the other work week we are in respect when we are going to come back on. But now, please, Chair, don't push us on the corner for the time. Because we only come back in October. After the 24th, we are in the end. When we are going to work to 11.
Can I take a response on the first question? I'm a Bungan. It's an organization of journalists
okay.
who are attached to Living Guardian with newspaper ministers. That's my analysis. Honorable Nicolakis.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'm going to speak without a mic because this one doesn't seem to work. That's all right with you. Chairperson, I firstly want to comment that I welcome in principle this legislation. I think it is. It would be valuable if we can sort out one or two things. It would be a valuable contribution. I also think it is necessary for making this comment. I know we should not be in the habit of trading a fish for swimming, but I should make the comment to say thank you, Minister, for being here with us. For very long, your predecessors did not come to our committee, and it is very welcome to have you attending this committee with us, and we really appreciate that. Chairperson, just firstly, with regards to public participation, I think it is wonderful that as the National Council of Provinces, we do engage the provinces on this matter. However, I also think that with regards to Section 75 legislation, that we as the second house of Parliament has an obligation to also have a look at the kind of public participation that was conducted in the National Assembly and to what extent we can further engage, especially expertise in the field as well, to get their input further. If that was done in the National Assembly, obviously there's no reason for us to duplicate that. But if there is scope to further engage in that regard, I think it is something that we can explore. Ultimately, what we want, and it links to what you said earlier in terms of the time frame, I think what we all want from all different parties is to make sure that ultimately when the bill passes, that we pass the best possible version of this bill. Then just one question and one comment with regards to the content of the bill itself. My comment is with regards to the reporting question. The Minister has indicated that there needs to be synergy in terms of the reporting. However, I would be more inclined to support a situation where the Council and the Minister reports twice. Because critical infrastructure is so important, it is something that I think is vital for the security of the country. It would be more in line with transparency and our role as Parliament to have reporting done more often than only once a year. Once a year comes down to five times a term. For the Council to then report biannually and then making it possible for the Minister to report biannually as well. I absolutely agree that you can't let the one report once and the Minister report twice because he's going to just repeat what he said the previous 6 months. But if you have both of them reporting more rather than less, I think it would be a lot more beneficial, both in terms of our duties and role as Parliament, but also in terms of the security of our country. Then just my one question with regards to the content of the bill. I think one of the most important modern developments in terms of the protection of critical infrastructure is the cyber component. Now, I see here in section 4.2, with the little chance that I had to go through the book, section 4.2 does indicate that it makes provision for 5 people who are qualified, knowledgeable, and experienced in fields to make sure that they are also on the board in that capacity. But those 5 people, there's no obligation on the commissioner and whoever appoints the council to make sure that at least one of those 5 people are experts in that specific field, in the field of cyber. Would it not be an improvement to say that a certain quota of those 5 members need to be experts in that specific field? I'm just scared we're going to, at some, and you would know a lot better than I do, I just don't want a situation where in the end we sit with 5 experts, but none of them are necessarily an expert in that particular field. And I think it is critical for us to have expertise in that field. Is there provision to make sure that we get that expertise onto the council, or at least that there's an obligation on the council to engage with experts in that field to make sure that the requirements in that regard are met, and that the council eventually, when it makes its decisions, are properly advised in the field of cyber security. If you can just respond to that one question. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Chair.
Let me greet the minister. Thank you for your presentation. My question is only on slide number 26. Slide number 1 says, offenders intended to maximum 3 years in prison. My question is, the fine will be determined by the magistrate without stipulating exercise. Because when you go down there, you talk about not exceeding 100 million rand. Huh? 100,000.
100 million. 10 million.
10 million.
I've done this.
You can reply, sir.
Chair, perhaps if I can just start with the last.
I'm just surprised. Unfortunately, the number of members is here. Because he talks about expertise on the cyber. What they all agree as they present what other areas that will need expertise, so that the appointments of those people cover all those areas that they need expertise. If they can be defined properly. And cyber, let us understand what are others. So that if it's true, when the committee needs cyber experts, and we have no cyber experts from the side, it puts you in the pool. But we have other identified areas in those that the appointment of 5 knowledgeable and all those people to cover those areas. I just want to add that before the response, because I do take the point of the staff, and staff is going to be a big thing as we go on with our lives. And the other buzzword at the present moment is the 4th revolution. The 4th industrial revolution. How we cover and understand these things. That's the point of the question.
Mr.
Gruder.
Thanks,
Chair. Let me start with the question raised by Honorable Mthethwa. The issue of 100 million or 10 years Chair, I raise it that in the presentation it's a typo. But if you look in the bill itself, on page 23 of the bill, in clause...
Which page?
Page 23. That is in clause 23.5F. Yeah, in the bill itself. Yeah, yes. Then it says, any person who in control, who does all those things in five, then we say that commits an offense and is liable on conviction to a fine or to imprisonment for a period not exceeding 5 years, or both to a fine and imprisonment, or in the case of a corporate, in the case of a corporate body, that is now companies, they say that as contemplated in section 332 of the CPA Act, a fine not exceeding 10 million rand. So that is the one that we're going with. That's just in the presentation, it was just a typo, that extra zero there. And the question raised by Honorable McCallis regarding the issue of cyber. If you look at clause 12.8 of the bill, that's in page 13. We say, we're proposing there that a cyber response committee must function as a standing committee to advise the council on any matter relating to information infrastructure. So there is a cyber response committee that will be a sort of advising the council on issues relating to cyber. But mainly, this bill is mainly dealing with physical security. So if there are any issues dealing with either cyber, this comes to my advice. And if you look at further clause of the bill, it will tell us that where there are issues of cyber, there might be correspondence or talk between the Minister of Police and the Minister of State Security as to whether it should fall under that legislation dealing with cyber security, or the Minister must declare it in terms of this legislation. And also, just lastly, the issue from Honorable Oliphant regarding the issue that there are certain things that this is not clear. I mentioned that these are the regulations, Chair. The empowering provisions are found in clause 27 of the bill. It tells us what areas would the minister be making regulations on. They're part of the Act, but they're not clear, but it's just empowering provisions. That the regulations will be coming to Parliament also for scrutiny before the Minister promulgates them into law. Mm-hmm. I don't know if there's anything that my other colleagues that might have left out. Maybe they can add.
It is, you raise a stray, it is not an obligation on the part to bring regulations to Parliament. It's the Minister's responsibility. And if you want to vote it with us, you are welcome.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to follow up on the response given. I just have one small concern with that. I absolutely understand what you are saying. But the cyber response team, in terms of the cyber response committee, in terms of cyber legislation, we all know that at the moment the country's cyber legislation is not on par with where it should be. The cyber security bill is on its way, but it's taking a very long time. So, I mean, we're at the end of the current parliament. If that bill doesn't make it to the NCOP on time, it's going to have to be reintroduced in the next parliament. It's going to take quite a few months and even a year or two or three to get that passed. And that does not guarantee that they're going to be properly funded, properly functional, and all of that. In the meantime, we're sitting with critical infrastructure that relies heavily on information technology. You can bring critical infrastructure to a standstill with a cyber attack. And that is what, at this stage, bothers me very much. In my opinion, if there is an attack on critical infrastructure, it's not going to be a physical one in the year 2018. It's going to be a cyber attack. So I absolutely understand and agree that, the physical protection of it is important. But the threat is in terms of the technology. And to leave it firstly for cyber legislation to be passed and to become effective and to become properly functional is going to leave us with quite some time a gap where we are absolutely not protected in terms of that minister. And I understand that it does not fall under police, it falls under state security, but that is something that we seriously need to consider as a serious security threat at this stage to our nation. And I'm afraid that although this bill will go a far way in assisting protecting critical infrastructure, we're still left with that gap. And that, for me at this stage, is the biggest threat to our critical infrastructure. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you for the comment. Other members, can we revisit that? It's not deliberation, it's the first presentation. We're still going to come back and deliberate after we've got submissions from the Dr. Martin.
Yeah. I think what they concern with by the moment, I don't know another one. It's cyber, especially cyber, what are the other tools of expertise which we need? I'm going to remember that we have raised it at Kentron, we have been looking at teaching and so forth. Is cyber the only area of concern? And that if ever appointments are going to be made, if ever in the need for the community, so we need to be informed. Is cyber the only area of expertise we need for?
Yes, Chair, if you look at on page 7 of the bill, clause 4.3, so for clause 2.6.2 and 4.3, 4.2c, Chair, when it deals with the five aspects, it says that the five members are appointed in terms of aid for the private sector or civil society, preferably must be qualified, knowledgeable, and experienced in the fields that include critical infrastructure protection, risk management, disaster management, or basic public services. It also, in 4.3, it's proposing that the members of the council must, when viewed collectively, preferably be persons who are suited to serve the council by virtue of their qualifications, expertise and experience in the field that includes infrastructure protection, engineering, disaster management, or security policy. Chair, if there's maybe another qualification that we might have left out, we are open that the committee can propose something. Also, Chair, whilst I'm still on the mic, you said, Chair, it's up to us regarding the issue of regulations. When the bill we brought it to the National Assembly, we said that the minister must just notify Parliament with regard to regulations. But it was at the insistence of the portfolio committee that it said it must come. But if this committee still feels that the minister can just notify Parliament, we're still happy with that as well.
Members, can we then give it a day? It's the first presentation, we're still going to interact. Thank you very much, Minister, and your entourage. You're free to give quietly what you think of it in the next slide. The Parliament, the legal advisors in Parliament will then brief us on the effect of the High Court order on the consideration of the firearm permit. After that, I will go to the If
Minister,
Minister, do you want to comment on the interdict to the Constitutional Court?
Why is it a state? It's a question of principle. We have any change of dealing with this matter going forward, because Chef Epstein-Wiley would concede in some error that maybe the complete readiness, these firearms we're talking about, there are 430,000. There are 430,000 firearms out there unlicensed. Taking one another to court, it should be better to work together how to deal with this. You see, in front of me, I have this photo. These are about 30 firearms that are in a bank in a certain house unlicensed. You see? Now, it's a question of who on behalf of the South African is more relevant to take this decision? The individual that is running this in the park party under the house, in the house somewhere in Northern Cape, the alcohol, I'm told, is 32, who's running this connection together with the mom, or is the government that is giving more responsibility on this matter? So I can't find the reason of the National Commission myself not appealing. Yeah. But also, I think it would be very open for discussion how to work the matter together with those private owners. But for now, we have no reason not to. Okay.
Thank you.
Okay.
Yes,
thank you, Honourable Member. The effect of the judgment, as the Minister was saying, licensing of firearms is a matter that is specified in legislation.
Mm.
However, the effect of the judgment is such that those people who hold firearms unlicensed, we are now
in the process of expiring,
as the lifespan has now been extended by the effect of this judgment. However, it's important to note that the judgment itself is an interim order. It was on an unopposed roll and on an urgent basis. Because of this judgment, it's now been put on the opposed roll and there will be a return date. And there is no guarantee that another judge who hears the finalizes the matter will come to the same conclusion.
This category of firearms on the minister's phone, which I assume maybe as a country we have no idea as to how many. How do you deal with it?
I think you've got illegal firearms. That we're not sure, the minister did not clarify whether those are illegal firearms or those are firearms in the same category, in the same category. But from where I sit, I do not think one man, a civilian, can have so many firearms, a private person, so many firearms licensed.
Mm-hmm.
So I take it as illegal firearms. But the minister is people.
No, Chief President, it's not illegal. You see, I have requested the police to call all the laws that ever existed. All. Because as you are seated, you are run by the laws of 1947. Which means you are run from the grave. No party here was born in 1947. So all of us who are unfriendly.
Minister, I thought you were older than that.
No, I think we are run from the grave. I think the other law is was summer 1936. So I have requested that they call this, and then we look at those that should be retained, and we look at those that should be amended. But on the one that you are talking about, it's worse than what you think, than this standard. The law, the gun law in South Africa, allows any individual to have an unlimited number. That's a law.
Oh.
A right to own unlimited as an individual in South Africa. I'm told it was the agreement of Anglo-Boer War that will keep what we have, we can increase. So we can't have a law that him and me, we can have two tracks of cars. But then within the law, the number does, except that it is, which has been discovered that some of these are legal, some are illegal on the station. So there is that law. Abusing the platform, yes, it looks like honorable member, we have five, two are ready to fight. That's the South African.
Okay.
He says
he's combing, then they will determine whether they will repeal or amend.
Well, it means you have been doing nothing.
I don't know. Then you enjoy yourself on the
quiz. For the past 25 years, you have been sitting with such law.
One of those things. Thank you very much.
In a day, more than how many, what was your said? 57 people are killed. That is why it's a simple reason. Lawless in a country.
Thank you, Honourable Member.
Let's repeal by now.
Can I go before I ask another question?
You are the minister. I wanted to ask if we are covered with our underground examination. Minutes of the 21st of August 2018, page 1. 21st August. Page 1. Nothing. Page 2.
Nothing.
The last page is page 3.
Done.
We're done. So I have a mover. Thank you very much.
We are done. No, you need to address that issue.
What issue?
Of misunderstanding.
No, I'm not addressing it, president.
No.
Before we leave, what was the answer on the issue of going to housing?
The four members that have responded to the invitation will be going after the sitting of the council.
Mm-hmm.
The shuttle service will be ready outside the NCOP. And then you'll just determine the time of that. I'm just speaking to the lecturer about the final
meeting.
And then it will be Boxburg 13 and then it will be part 14.
Thank you.